Hello, I'm Adnan Hafiz. I'm an artist working and living in Cairo. I work in the field of contemporary dance and contemporary music. I run the Harka Dance Development and Research Platform, which is a movement and performance studies project that was initiated 7 years ago, that also runs the International Dance Festival and is establishing the archive of Arab contemporary performing arts.
So Adnan, you were involved with the revolution from the beginning. If you could tell me now, 2.5 years later, after what happened on June 30th and the ensuing days, what is your reaction to what has happened in the last week?
Well, the last week, people marched all over Egypt, surprisingly in numbers that are unprecedented, apparently, according to several analysts and historians, unprecedented in world history in terms of political protests. And people were on the streets, including myself, because 1 year of the rule of the Muslim Brotherhood and its allies, and 1 year of Morsi, brought nothing to the nation but more persecutions, torture. We hear of cases of gang rapes, we hear of exile cases, we hear of atheists being arrested for discussing their faith openly. We hear of new crimes, even such as the insult of a president, which is a crime I personally have never heard of before, even in my country. And we hear of all of this, and not just hear it, we witness it. We witness daily long queues waiting on the street trying to fill up the tanks of the gas in their cars. We have electric power cuts daily. We have the channels on television that are just spreading nothing but hate speech against any non-conformist identity in the country, whether be it a Sunni Muslim or a Shia Muslim or a Christian or a woman. We watch phone numbers and house addresses of people being published live on these TV channels that are attacking people and inciting violence against them. So basically 1 year of terror, 1 year of rising hate speech. This is on the daily level, but on a very, very basic level, 1 year of utter dysfunction where the state itself has been falling apart to pieces. And the Egyptian people did not want to witness this to continue furthermore, especially that President Morsi himself, when he was elected, gave himself a 100 days ultimatum and a set of tasks that he promised to fulfill within 100 days. 100 days passed and nothing was fulfilled. 1 year passed and nothing was fulfilled, and it was about time that Morsi, his group, his allies, and his party would leave the country.
And so what is your reaction to the international media narrative is that this is a military coup and that this can only bring more problems for Egypt? How do you react to that?
I honestly do not understand why the international media is insisting on using the term military coup, because being on the streets and screaming in millions against a terrorist government, and I insist on using this term because of the hate speech that I just explained previously, but also because of how, for instance, President Morsi decides to side with jihadists in other countries, and in a very paralegal gesture from his side, which to me delegitimizes him as a president immediately. I don't understand why 33 million people marching on streets and over 20 million signing the rebellion petition against the president. I don't see why this is not enough for people to understand that this is the people's voice. This is the people that marched against tyranny, marched against terror. People who wanted to protect their state on an infrastructure level from further deterioration, marched against them, and there was only this option of the military intervening to prevent more bloodshed, or there was the option of civil war. And the option of civil war, Egyptians do not want to go to. No nation wants to be subjected to this. And Egyptians, by nature, are peaceful people. They are not armed. We do not carry guns. We do not own guns. We do not even have the desire to go down on the streets and march against other fellow Egyptians. Children. We can march asking for a better life. We can say down, down with the regime. But that's all what we have, our dreams and our voices and desire for a better life.
So do you have any concerns about the military now being the body that brought forth this change in light of what SCAF did to the Egyptian people for a year and a half?
Nobody can forget what SCAF and what the Ministry of Interior Affairs and the police have done to Egypt over the past years. Living 60 years of military rule is enough to engrave in our memories so much that would not be forgotten by a sudden gesture of support from the military, like what happened. To me, what the military did now is its most basic function, to protect the nation, to protect the people, and to protect the country from war, which was about to erupt civil war, and we hope it doesn't, and to protect the people that were under attack. I think the military, by doing this, they are simply complying to the will of the millions of the people that marched. Those millions were also the millions that marched against the military and marched against SCAF, asking for the end of the military rule, successfully ending the military rule after 6 years. The military, at the same time, did not claim any executive positions this time, and the Constitutional Court is the body that is supervising this process and making sure the transition happens peacefully and successfully. I think if the military decides to take any executive position or suddenly decides to rule again like it was in the past, turning it into a full military coup, I am sure that the people are going to march against this because the people are done with the military rule.
There's concerns about the targeting and political repression of the Muslim Brotherhood and its supporters right now, and that this can further lead to division and sectarian violence in Egypt. How do you think this should be dealt with? And do you think that this would lead to street warfare for an ongoing basis in Egypt?
I think one needs to differentiate between Muslims and Islamists, and one needs to differentiate between people who believe in the project of political Islam and those who are in positions and in political parties or in secret groups, whether these are charity secret groups or terrorist groups in their nature. One needs to be very clear always about these differences. One also needs to be able to not reject a part of a nation at moments like this, because it's very easy to generalize and to decide that every man with a beard and every woman with a veil is part of the regime, and therefore we start a witch hunt process, which is completely wrong because it's against what this revolution is calling for, which is freedom and social justice. Yet at the same time, one needs to be very vigilant when we are dealing with a secret entity such as the Muslim Brotherhood, which is no longer secret, but I mean an entity with legs and arms everywhere and secret cells that we don't know anything about and support bodies that keep being discovered every now and then, that these are all pouring into this one big body more financial resources and political and even at certain points militant support, if one would say. We need to be very careful how we're dealing with this. I'm just surprised that that one is not also remembering the history of the Muslim Brotherhood when one is dealing with this. The Muslim Brotherhood itself, its ideology, what it has been representing, what it has been doing in Egypt and in the region, should also be remembered when we are dealing with them and their allies, and I insist on that, at a point like this in history. It is not a yes or no answer, and it's not black and white. It's just a lot of political sobriety that we need to have, a lot of understanding so that no discrimination happens from the other side of the spectrum, but at the same time, not to overcompromise and decide, let's just be all friends again, and then we start the whole loop again, which I would also say exactly the same in relation to the police that is now siding with the people and in relation to SCAF, which is now siding with the people. One should never forget history. One should always be vigilant and politically sober, but one should not also be all the time paranoid and thinking the worst scenario is ever going to happen. Mm.
Well, one of the revolution's biggest challenges is Egypt's geopolitical position and the influence and the meddling in foreign affairs by the United States and other Western countries. I'm wondering if you could tell me, what is your analysis of the U.S. reaction to what has happened in Egypt?
I think the fact that the U.S., if I'm just thinking in terms of media, coming from the side of the U.S., media bodies, whether printed press or television channels, but I'm also thinking in terms of official statements that came from the foreign affairs, such as Mr. Royce's statement. There are many narratives that are being forged at the same time. There are many positions. There's not one position only. And I do not know, honestly, if this is because what happened in Egypt, which we truly would like to believe, and so many believe, has been revolutionary and radical on so many levels that it is actually giving the world such a hard time to accept and is giving the world such a hard time in terms of how to pigeonhole it, which frame, which pre-set and pre-made frame fits it. And I actually do not myself find any pre-made frames that could fit this event into it. I think because of the nature of the event itself, and because of the very particular and complex geopolitical nature that Egypt possesses, we are getting all these mixed messages from the American side, whether on the level of journalism or on the level of the state itself. I hope, this is all I could say, I hope that this is going to be resolved and that people are going to understand, people in general are going to understand that when a nation marches against tyranny and against violence, even if tyranny and violence came through ballot boxes, that it is the voice of the people that matters, because it is the voice of the people that saves lives, and it is in nobody's interest to have one more war, and certainly not in a country of the size, history, and geopolitical magnitude that Egypt has. It is absolutely dangerous to ignore the voices of the masses and their desire for a better life. Yet having said this, I'm also aware of the repercussions this could do to so many dynamics that govern these international relations and affairs. And one remembers the very recent declaration from the side of the African Union by suspending the membership and the activities of Egypt until the constitutional process is started again in our country. And this just makes me wonder why this didn't happen last year, for example, when we operated without the constitution, or when we were under martial law, or when there was the ouster of Mubarak. Why didn't this happen? Why is it happening now? So with moments like this and remarks like that, one starts to understand more and more the complexity of our demand, which is freedom and justice, and that our demand involves so many players who do not live on this land, but it involves so many players. And I think it's just through time that this is going to be revealed and all the agendas are going to be revealed, because already so many of them have been revealed the past 2.5 years. I just hope that the nation stays very strong and that we do not forget that our demand is legitimate, that our demand for justice and freedom are legitimate demands, even if nobody else wants to stand on our side.
So you're an artist. Your work has to do with performance art and breaking new grounds in art. I'm wondering if you can tell me the state of art and culture under Morsi and how this was one of the reasons also that people were taking to the streets.
Sure, sure. Well, worth mentioning is that there have been a lot of attacks on freedom of speech, and that's why, again, the 12 months under Morsi have honestly been not a democracy at all, and nothing about it was even embodying the promised constitution, which is a very problematic constitution that had occasionally notions on freedom of speech and arts and culture. But one remembers many stories. One remembers attacks on certain festivals of the arts, and festivals that have been suspended and not revisited again, and the closing of the Cairo Contemporary Dance Center at the Opera House, or the threats of shutting down the Cairo Ballet Company and the conservatoire by the upper house, Majlis al-Shura, when they were discussing in their sessions that perhaps it's an art form that encourages sexual practice and prostitution, classical ballet. And so many attacks, the National Archive, the changing of the director to a director that belongs to the Brotherhood, and all the mess that happened with the documents then, and the problems getting access even to the archives are much worse now than when it was a police state in the past, like we described it to be. Changing the Minister of Culture and bringing a Minister of Culture from the Brotherhood, who is against freedom of speech and is terrorized by artistic practices, that when there was a sit-in of ballet dancers and opera singers and musicians around the Ministry of Culture's office in Zamalek in Cairo, the description of this sit-in by the followers and supporters of the new minister was that these are the terrorists, the dancers and the musicians who were in the streets singing. This was what terrorized the new government. So we had to live under this as artists and wonder every day if our practices are suddenly going to be framed as crimes. I make dance, and overnight I wake up to listen to speeches about dance being non-constitutional and not legitimate and therefore should be banned. My practice, my profession, which I considered to be a very important profession at times like this, because I considered dance to be a very political art form at times like this, and in regions like ours, regions of the world like ours, to wake up and suddenly realize that my profession is going to become a crime, and I'm just basically doing what I've been doing since I was 8 years old. So living under such conditions, one suddenly remembers the importance for highlighting certain basic facts that perhaps are not clear to the Western media, that it is so easy to say freedom of speech and let's fight for opening the Islamist-owned channels, but one also needs to remember that these Islamist-owned channels were describing artistic practices as prostitution and literally calling certain artists by their name and calling them prostitutes, literally on television. In so many cases, even defamation of character, publishing phone numbers, home addresses of activists or members of other political ideologies, not necessarily artists, but basically people who were not part of the regime, and either defamation of character or putting them at risk by announcing their personal details and contacts so that people would go and attack them in their own households. So I don't understand how this is framed as freedom of speech, and how the attacks on art forms and the closing down of a dance school that remains closed until now, not of course the excuse is not that that it is dance is a forbidden form or that it is haram. Of course, the easiest excuses are always redistribution of budget and what is the priority and what is the culture agenda of a country at times like this. This is the easiest excuse to be used with so many of these shutting down and shifting of directors and alliances between institutions. But with this rise in censorship, there's also a rise of self-censorship, where artists themselves start to worry and start thinking that perhaps we cannot do this anymore. And this is the downfall of any artistic scene. And a country like Egypt that has witnessed thriving artistic movements since its birth, and a country where dance is part of its daily social practice, not just an artistic practice. People dance at any given time, even on the streets while chanting against the regime, people were dancing and singing. You realize that the impact of oppression is going to backfire. And I believe that a very important push that happened to this revolution to continue until successfully getting Morsi out of his office was the oppression and suppression of intellectuals and artists and the attack on freedom of speech. Mm. I would just like to mention that there's a lot of sudden shock from the world in terms of seeing videos that have surfaced the past 3-4 days, the attacks from members and supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood or supporters to the President Morsi. It is all the attacks that have been happening in terms of gunmen and armed protesters shooting at peaceful civilians during their own protests against the regime, that such attacks and such stories that are surfacing now in terms of the gang rapes, the organized rapes against female protesters and activists, or the shootings that are happening, or the kidnaps, or the attacks on particular political figure and spreading rumors, but this has been happening the whole last year, and that this is part of why Egyptians marched against Morsi, because even if this president came through ballot box and through democracy as an institutionalized notion, which is also a debatable argument how it happened and how it has been monitored and if it was rigged or if it was not, but even if it was a clean and clear process of institutionalized democracy that led to having him there, 12 months of such attacks that nobody has heard of are really enough for the people to say no, are enough for the people to realize that even if this was democracy through the ballot boxes, there's also democracy through the motion of the people and their voices. And what the world needs to remember is perhaps indeed the country has been suffering a lot of injustice for 1 year, and perhaps the way that we are shocked at videos that have surfaced the past 3 years, 3 days only, excuse me, that one needs to also study what has been happening the past year to formulate a better opinion and position towards why this is not a coup and why this is necessary and why this is a matter of life or death.
Thank you so much, Adham.
Thank you, Lillian.